Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. Last episode, I mentioned that my mom would be covering for me, and as promised, she has worked very hard on this episode. I'm really grateful to her, and I hope that you enjoy this bonus episode. Some of the stories do hit very close to home. She's had a personal relationship in one way or another with the people involved. Okay, here's my mom.
Years ago, I remember speaking to my mom about true crime. We used to always talk about it, especially when she used to read old detective magazines. I never considered that true crime could touch our family until she told me of a crime that caught my interest. It was of an aunt of one of my childhood friends. I guess the relationship would be better described as my uncle's brother-in-law's sister-in-law. That's a bit complicated, huh? Her name was Josefina Davila Hernandez. She was from Sinton, Texas. Sinton is a small South Texas town 27 miles outside of Corpus Christi. She and her husband Raul would travel quite often to Plano from Sinton to visit her siblings in the area. From conversations that I had with my mom and my uncle, they were a fairly young couple, barely in their 30s. They, like any normal couple, liked to have a good time. It's the way things were back in the day. You drop off your kids with a relative and hit the town, probably go dancing at a local bar or at a friend's house just to hang out. During this time, there was still some racism going on. In those days, the term Hispanic or Latino weren't used. It was either Mexican or Spanish if the person was being nice, or greaser and spick if they were trying to be derogatory. People were still getting used to integration on all sorts of levels within the community. You'll understand why I bring this up later on in the show. Josefina had no children of her own. She had two sisters and a brother. They were close-knit siblings from what I was told. They would travel to Plano, about 430 miles further north of Corpus Christi. Plano, as you may recall from past episodes, is a suburb of Dallas, Texas. Josefina and her husband would make their normal rounds to houses of family members and friends. After all, they were all from the same hometown. My Uncle Dan happened to be babysitting his twin daughters the evening the couple stopped by on that Saturday night. They wanted to go out drinking with my uncle. For reasons mentioned earlier, he couldn't go out since he was watching my cousins. They visited for a little bit and they left to go to Josefina's brother, who didn't live too far from my Uncle Dan. It's been thought that Josefina went out on her own to go play poker with a few of her friends. There was also a hippie concert going on that weekend in a neighboring city, which could have been another reason why the young couple came to town. Her husband Raul ended up going to my uncle's house Sunday morning looking for Josefina. How it was known she never made it back home is unclear. Raul went to everyone's house he could think of that might have seen her. No one knew anything. Her disappearance had been reported to the police. Remember, this is back in 1971. The police did search for her. They followed whatever information had been provided. The Plano Police Department interrogated just about every Hispanic male they could find. The police would follow Hispanic males to their jobs and ask if they had seen her or if they were responsible for her disappearance. Still, no one knew anything. Approximately a week later, a trash bag would be discovered on the side of the road in an open field area by a farmer in Lucas, Texas. Lucas is another small suburb of Dallas. It's about 20 minutes north of Plano. In fact, there were a few plastic bags scattered alongside that area. The bags contained Josefina's dismembered body. Needless to say, her family and friends were distraught at the news. No one has ever been charged with this horrific crime against her. The same day of Josefina's service, there were people in attendance that were being questioned at her funeral. One of Josefina's sisters would annually go to the police department to find out if there would be any new developments. Sadly, there were none. Elena, Josefina's sister, would die of cancer without ever knowing who brutally murdered and later dismembered her sister. I contacted the Plano Police Department about this case, wanting to get more information. Their response was they had no record of her death. I found it strange, but didn't have the opportunity to delve in further. Her murder remains unsolved and apparently very cold. I wonder about Josefina's family. They are all older and some have passed away without ever knowing the real truth about what happened to Josefina back in 1971. I wonder if the younger generation in her family will continue to seek the truth. Another event that took place many years later with another friend of ours, Kathy was her name. She happened to be a friend that worked with my mom. I babysat Kathy's eldest child, Wendy, when I was a teenager. Kathy worked in a factory with my mom making speakers. She worked part-time as a bartender for an Italian restaurant in Plano. Kathy was about 31 years old at the time. She was divorced and the mother of one child, Wendy. Wendy was raised more with her maternal grandmother since Kathy had two jobs. Kathy was a very fun-loving, outgoing young woman. She met all kinds of people through her part-time job. She aspired to have more in life. By that I mean she wanted a good-looking, financially stable man who would pamper her as any young woman dreams about. While she was waiting for Mr. Wright, she met Michael, a divorced single dad with custody of his son Christopher. The two would date and eventually marry. Kathy would have her ups and downs in her marriage as well as being a stepmom. Wendy and her stepbrother Chris would get along for the most part. They had the same general issues you would expect in a blended family. Kathy and Michael would eventually divorce after an up-and-down relationship. Kathy would find love again and later remarry in 1987. Her husband Suhail Ilyas was from Pakistan. In April 1988, Kathy gave birth to her second child and Suhail's first child, a son named Aaron. Wendy went off to go live with a maternal great-aunt around this time. She was about 16. Wendy was 17 when she started driving, and it was shortly after learning how to drive that she was involved in a car accident. From what I recall, the damages were minor, but in Wendy's mind, it was major. It was so major in her young mind that she took her own life. She left a note behind saying she was sorry for wrecking the car. Aaron was only 2 months old at the time of Wendy's unforeseen death. Suhail, Kathy, and Aaron would move from Plano to Alexandria, Virginia, perhaps to start a new life or to help Kathy cope with life after having lost a child. In July 1990, Kathy would go on to give birth to her third child, another son they would name Zachy, or Zach for short. Intimate family members say that Kathy was separating from Suhail and was going to return to Texas with her sons in June of 2002. Others say she was just taking the boys to Texas for vacation. Kathy often would say how controlling Suhail was with her, and at times he was verbally abusive towards her and the boys. On the morning of June 18, 2002, Kathy was in the shower and heard gunshots. She ran out of the shower, grabbing a robe to see where that noise had come from. The shots were fired by Suhail. He killed 14-year-old Aaron and 11-year-old Zach as they slept. Suhail turned the gun on himself. Aaron and Suhail were dead. Zach was transported to the hospital where he later succumbed to the wounds he suffered. After all these years, I wondered how Kathy was doing. Last I knew, Kathy and Michael found each other again and remarried. I can't imagine what it's like to lose all your children. I do know what it's like to lose one, but in a sense, it's like all three of mine are missing. I know that Kathy is surviving and coping in her own way, such as I do each day. The next story I'm about to tell you is one that's really close to me. It had been a year since I separated from the kid's biological father. I began a relationship with Lalo, a single father of three sons. In March of 1992, Lalo and I started going our separate ways because my ex was always harassing us in some way, shape, or form. I ended up moving out from there after my ex broke into my apartment tearing up all my clothes. We literally had only the clothes on our back. I'll refer to the biological father as Big R. Big R had a friend that was from the same ranch in Mexico. That friend of his had an uncle and aunt that were chosen by Big R to be the godparents of my youngest child, Lainey. I'll call this friend Hulano, which is the equivalent term for Joe Blow in Spanish. Big R had Hulano become friends with Lalo. Well, more like an acquaintance. Back in the day, anyone in the construction business always knew of someone renting out a room. This is how Hulano came to move in with Lalo. The apartment complex that we lived in was managed by Lalo's sister-in-law, Michelle. Michelle had two children with Nacho, Lalo's brother. The girl was the oldest and the boy was the youngest. The girl was the same age as my daughter at the time. She was 5 years old. It never failed on Fridays up until Sunday there would be partying going on, cooking out, drinking, and listening to music. While everyone was down by the pool area having fun, the kids were asleep. Michelle lived right in front of the pool, and Lalo lived above the pool. Hulano would take this opportunity to prey on Michelle's daughter. He made his way to Michelle's apartment, and he raped the little girl. After his assault, he discarded her like trash, literally. He took her and dumped her by the dumpster in the complex. When they found out what happened to the little girl, you can imagine how livid this family was. Lalo called to tell me about it, as well as asked me if I knew where Hulano might be. I was horrified about this incident. Realistically, this could have been Lainey. I'm grateful that it wasn't, but I'm saddened that it happened to an innocent child in the first place. Apparently, Hulano moved out of Lalo's apartment after he assaulted her. I made a phone call to Martha, the daughter of the couple who Big R wanted to be the godparents of Lainey. She told me that Hulano was with his sister in East Dallas. I made an anonymous tip to the police department in Plano. That evening, they had picked him up and put him in jail. Eventually, he was sent to prison. I would end up seeing this little girl at a Halloween carnival held by the local elementary school. My heart was so heavy. I was told that a day before the year anniversary of her brutal rape, she had been raped again. I don't believe that it was anyone Big R knew, and that it was an unfortunate, sadistic, random attack. I can only hope this poor child had the support needed to overcome these tragic events. I often wonder what happened to her and how she's doing. I hope that she has found strength and overcome the atrocious acts that were performed on her. The reason I share these stories is because there are people out there who have experienced abuse one way or another, and as a mother and a grandmother, I want you to know there are resources out there for you. You aren't alone. Don't ever think that. The resources are linked in the show's notes. I often look back at the things that have happened or could have happened while having spent 13 years in an abusive relationship. I'm so blessed that I'm telling these stories and not being one of the stories my daughter speaks of. Miha, I want to thank you for allowing me to contribute a few of my experiences to your podcast. It is our hope at True Crime Fan Club that all families discussed in this podcast always find comfort each and every day. I'm no expert at podcasting, but I've enjoyed sitting in for my daughter. Until next time.
Thank you for listening, and thanks, Mom. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review on iTunes. It really does help us out. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter at TCFCpod, Facebook.com/TCFCpodcast. You can also find us on Instagram, and of course, our website is TrueCrimeFanClub.com. If you have an episode request or general suggestion, send us an email, TCFCpod@gmail.com. I would like to thank the most recent Patreon supporters, Mary A. and Jordan L. Thank you very much for your generous patronage. I hope that you continue to enjoy the show. Our music for the show was provided by We Talk of Dreams, who created custom music just for us. Their work will be featured in all of our episodes, so check them out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams. Check out these awesome podcasts while you're waiting for the next episode. Canadian True Crime. Host Christy Lee, an Aussie-Canadian and true crime podcast addict, will deliver stories covering the most heinous and shocking crimes in recent Canadian history. Nighttime Podcast, covering Canadian mysteries, crime, and many weird and wonderful happenings. hosted by Jordan. Quid Pro Quo, host L delivers your friendly neighborhood forensic psychology podcast. Topics in true crime from a psychological point of view presented with empathy, humor, and straightforward language. Working to better the world through the power of morbid curiosity. True Crime Guys, a true crime podcast with two Sin City smartasses. They dissect compelling crimes, everything from small happenings to the world's most notorious killers. Interesting conversation and speculation, as well as the occasional off-the-wall theory, is sure to ensue. Terms is a serial audio drama set in a world far too parallel to our own. The American political system is strained to breaking by intractable political impasse and the growing divide among parties. Checks and balances that should buttress our liberties are failing, and the very meaning and purpose of government is called into question. All politics, it seems, is personal. Until next time.